The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is opposed to plans announced by the military to hold daily tactical pauses in fighting along one of the main roads into the besieged and bombarded Gaza Strip, which would allow aid delivery into the Palestinian enclave. Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin, joins me now. Scott, good morning.
Good morning to you, Pat.
I was just bemused by this. I mean, the boss of the country is the prime minister. They have a president, but he's more ceremonial like our own. The boss is the prime minister, and the IDF seem to have gone on a solo run.
Be bemused, Pat, if it wasn't for the fact that this incident shows that you've got millions of people who are still being held hostage by this conflict in Gaza. But taking up your point, this is an open split between Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli military, as we're in the ninth month of the operations that have killed now almost 40,000 people in Gaza. That rift has been there below the surface for quite some time. The military have been unhappy that you have an open-ended war with no idea of what the goals, what the objectives are, really from a military point of view or even a political point of view. Netanyahu has made it clear he's not going to accept any limit on those military operations. He's not going to accept a ceasefire. And so you've got the military caught in this vise between the fact that they're being charged on a day-to-day basis to continue the operations, but you've got pressure from the international community to pull back on this. And now you've got growing pressure within Israel, given the fact that the leader of the opposition, who is a former head of the IDF, Benny Gantz, has resigned from the war cabinet. You have the prospect of early elections, and you have thousands of Israelis who were out on the streets this past weekend with the opposition movement calling for a million to be out on the streets this
week. And I understand all of those pressures, but normally pressure is applied to the political class. The military, if you like, are isolated from pressure. They do what they are charged to do by their political masters.
I mean, first of all, I mean, the Israeli military, you know, is obviously always over what we're talking about, more than 75 years of existence, state of Israel, declared itself to be separate from the political establishment. Okay, so you have that civil military, you know, separation. But the military is an integral part of Israeli culture. Anyone who watches Israel on a day-to-day basis, who knows anything about Israeli history, knows about the repeated wars that Israel's been involved in, knows that the military has a central place in Israeli society and culture. So they're never going to just be on the sidelines. Then in this case, the reason why the military comes to the center on this is because you not only have Netanyahu, who is standing out against a ceasefire, you've got members of the wider cabinet, such as the finance minister, Mr. Smotrich, the security minister, Mr. Ben-Gvir, who not only are opposed to a ceasefire, they want to remove all Gazans from Gaza. You know, that's what they're looking to do. And so you're not in a position where you're going to have a coherent political response at this point, which means that the military has to step in a very limited way and say, oh, we're going to do something which doesn't involve killing. We'll get some aid into these Gazans. We'll get some pause in operations so we can appear not to be the bad guys in all this.
Have they been concerned that they are the bad guys? I mean, maybe more telling would be the sight of 11 funerals of Israeli soldiers to show that in spite of their technological military might, they are not, it's not happening at no cost.
I mean, the military are also concerned about the fact that they are taking casualties. And they're taking casualties, of course, not just in Gaza, but you have the prospect of a wider conflict between Israel and Hezbollah up on the Lebanese border. And Israel cannot wage that conflict without the prospect of more casualties. But again, Israel's casualties, of course, especially compared to, you know, more than almost 38,000 in Gaza, are still, you know, in the hundreds amongst the military. So it's not like they're taking, as it were, a day-to-day beating from Hamas, and they're not likely to do so. I think it's much more the optics, which is that, and I know this may be hard for people to appreciate, given we've witnessed this mass killing now going into the ninth month, but there's always an Israeli projection that it is a democracy, an Israeli projection that it does care for values and for rights. That's how Israel likes to present itself. The military is not separate from that. And right now they are facing a prime minister who, because of his own personal predicament, the fact that if there is a ceasefire, he's out of power. The fact that if there's a ceasefire, he's probably on trial for bribery. They're facing a prime minister who isn't going to budge. And at this point, they, along, I think, with some ministers in the cabinet who quietly are encouraging them, are trying to find some room for maneuver.
So is it that they're trying to indicate that Netanyahu does not listen to his military leaders about what is doable and what is achievable, and therefore this is they're stepping out of line here to demonstrate to the world that they have some sort of independence from him, which it just seems bizarre that the prime minister who's supposed to call the shots is being second-guessed by his own military.
Well, I think they're signaling to others inside Israel and outside. So remember, there were three members of the war cabinet. Now, Benny Gantz, of course, who we referred to earlier, you know, he's now out. He's resigned. And he said at the time he was giving Netanyahu an ultimatum, which was, give us the conditions under which we're going to end this war, under which we're going to get about 120 dead and living hostages back, and under which we're going to get a political resolution. Netanyahu didn't do so. And so I think the military, possibly with Gantz's knowledge, are signaling here. I think they're signaling to the other member of the war cabinet who's still there, the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, who is quite hardline, but will Gallant move towards the military's position? Will he stand against Netanyahu? And I think they're signaling to others who are talking to Gallant and to Gantz for months. The United States, the Biden administration, has been trying to isolate Netanyahu by going to the other members of the war cabinet, by trying to find some room for maneuver, and they will have been talking to the Israeli military as well. I'm not saying this is going to lead to a rebellion against Netanyahu. I think everything is in flux right now, and there's no immediate prospect that this will alter Israeli military operations. But I do think the temperature is rising within Israel, especially if we wind up having a two-front war, both in Gaza and in Lebanon.
Now, these are not just momentary pauses. They're 11-hour pauses every day for the foreseeable. What is likely to happen during those 11-hour pauses?
Well, what the military was signaling could happen, and I say could happen because Israel has said in the past that it would allow aid into Gaza and has not done so. Israel, for example, you might remember, said after the killing of those seven workers from the World Central Kitchen, which is a U.S. organization, we're not going to kill aid workers anymore and we'll let some aid in. Didn't happen. Israel said it would open the Rafah crossing, which is near the Egyptian border, into Gaza. Didn't do so. Now, the military might just be posturing, but they might be serious here, which is we do want to get some type of good news, as it were, and I say that in a very limited sense, good news in terms of what Israel's doing. But I have to emphasize, as soon as they issued this declaration last night of the pauses from 8 a.m. till 7 p.m. on a daily basis, Benjamin Netanyahu hit them and hit them hard and said, you didn't consult the cabinet. Netanyahu's son went on Twitter and said that the military leaders might be traitors. The hard right ministers in the cabinet called the military fools and delusional. So the military immediately had to pull back on the announcement and say, oh, we're still attacking Hamas in Rafah, which is this big city in southern Gaza. And indeed, those operations did continue overnight with attacks in eastern central Rafah. So if the military was serious about opening some space for aid operations and for a pause, they very quickly were pushed back by Netanyahu while we wait to see what other members of the Israeli establishment were going to do.
Now, the security minister, Ben-Gvir, he said whoever decided on this tactical pause was a fool who should lose their job. I mean, the prospect of sacking senior military figures in the middle of a campaign is probably foolish because you don't want to use footballing parlance, you don't want to lose the dressing room containing all the military.
Ben-Gvir doesn't care because Ben-Gvir's gamble, first of all, is a personal gamble. He is one of that group of far-right leaders, and they are far-right, who have risen in Israel amidst the tensions of recent years. He would like to rise even beyond being security minister. He would like immediately to be part of the war cabinet. He's in it for personal power. He is gambling, I suspect, that even as he attacks the military commanders for being too soft on Gaza, if you can believe that, that there are others within the military who will support him or who will work with him. It is a huge gamble. I'm not sure it will work. But I think, as we've seen in other countries, Ben-Gvir is gambling that he can benefit even if he splits Israeli society, that that split will lead to a move further to the right, and that that move further to the right will reinforce this open-ended war on Gaza and against Gazans.
Now, you mentioned in passing about the protests on the streets of Israel. Do we have any idea? Obviously, there are people who are anti-war, full stop, but then there are people who believe this is the wrong tactic to get the hostages home, and that would be another cohort of the protesters. What is the, if you like, the popular impetus for protest?
I think
and,
a mix,
how large might it be?
First of all, there were thousands on the streets over the weekend, and there will be protest again today in front of the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. There will be protest in front of Netanyahu's homes in Jerusalem and in Caesarea. And those protests will continue throughout the week. So we'll see how many they gather. At a minimum, it's going to be thousands, but I think you could be reaching into the tens of thousands at least. Now, who's in them? You have people who just think the war is a mistake, full stop, and who are anti-war. But you have an increasing number of people who think that the war has failed in what they consider to be the primary goal, which is to get the hostages back. And the hostages are a central emotive issue in Israeli society, in Israeli culture. And there's no prospect that Netanyahu is going to get that 120 back, you know, which is why the Israelis played up the idea that they brought four back at great cost, at the cost of hundreds of deaths in Gaza last week. Then there are some who think, well, maybe the war, you know, we support the war in principle, but in practice, it's just not working out. This is just not benefiting us. And I think that's the number that's increasing. I don't think this is a, you know, as it were, an anti-war movement throughout here. But I think, you know, this was supposed to be wrapped up within weeks in terms of what Netanyahu said. And now we're going into the ninth month. And what is significant about the protest is saying is we want elections by the 1 year anniversary of October 7th, when Hamas launched these mass killings. And I think as you get closer to that 1 year anniversary, if there is no political resolution here, then I think, yeah, we could be getting to a tipping point in terms of what happens with Israel, well, with Netanyahu specifically, and with the fate of Israel more broadly.
Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.